So this is Ruth Blue interviewing Sekeshi Thacker on the 18th of September 2012 at her home in Stanmore for the Thalidomide and Oral History Project. Sekeshi, have you seen and signed the copyright and consent form?
Yes, I have. Thank you.
And would you mind first starting just by telling me your full name, age, date and place of birth?
Oh dear. Date of birth or date of today's date?
Date of birth.
Okay. Yeah. My full name is Sekeshi Thacker. Date of birth is 16th March 1964. And place of birth is Kampala, Uganda, East Africa.
In this first interview, I'm mostly going to ask you about your childhood and your birth, your family and school life, and any early medical interventions that you had.
Okay.
So first of all, could you tell me a little bit about your family background, who your parents were, what kind of work they did, or brothers and sisters?
Right. Well, as I told you, I was born in Kampala. My father is now a retired GP. He worked in Uganda in a place called Jinja, a small town called Jinja. He graduated in India, but married my mother, and my mother was born in Uganda, so they went to live in Uganda. Even my mother was born in Uganda, so we go right back generations. My grandfather was an industrialist and one of the first sort of settlers in Uganda, Indian settlers in Uganda. And my father's background is, his father was a journalist in India and wrote for some very famous magazines and newspapers in India. My father graduated from one of the very good teaching hospitals in Mumbai and went to Africa after he married my mother to practice. He had a very good practice. It was very popular in Uganda, and because mum's family was very well known, they were all, you know, knew my father very well. He was my grandfather came to live with us in Uganda for a little while, and my grandfather had a heart condition for which he was taking thalidomide. And when my mother fell pregnant with me, she had a couple of episodes where she couldn't sleep and she was agitated and, you know, she was feeling sick. My father had heard about the drug, saying that it was a very good drug for sleepless nights and sickness and all that. So he gave it to my mother. The medicine that was left over from my grandfather was given to my mother. And I think, as far as I remember, when they talked to me, she only took two pills.
You sort of naturally moved on to my next question, which was talking to you about your parents' decision to use the drug thalidomide. And was it widely prescribed in Uganda at that time? Do you know?
No, Uganda was at that time part of the British Empire. Yeah. So it naturally came through after the British government had approved of it here. The drugs were automatically sent to Uganda if there were, you know, good drugs or whatever. So this was actually for my grandfather, but it didn't say anything that what damage it could cause for other people. So naturally, assuming that it was such a fantastic drug, my father felt that, you know, it would do my mother good, at least give her a few good nights, etc. And so he just naturally gave it to her without thinking about anything. And at that time, there were no warnings sent out to Africa or no withdrawals or anything like that. So,
well, why would you not think it?
Precisely, yes.
And was it something your parents were quite open to talk about with you, about this, their use of thalidomide?
No.
Or did they find it difficult?
Found it very difficult. Mm. In fact, still find it difficult to the point that I tell them, you know, sometimes I'm very nasty as well. Sometimes I tell them it's all your fault, but deep down I know it's not their fault. But it does hurt my dad because he was the one who prescribed it. If it had been described by somebody else, for example, a GP or something like that, it wouldn't have been so hard to talk. But because he prescribed it, it is very, very hard. Even for my mom and him to talk, it was very hard. And absolutely for me, just impossible, because I don't want them to feel guilty.
Yes.
And what's happened is happened, and through no fault of theirs. So I just don't talk about it with them.
Yes, yes. No, that does add an extra side to the story that your father prescribed
yes.
it. That must be quite an unusual scenario, I would have thought.
I think there are another couple of thalidomiders with father, doctors as fathers
yeah.
who it's happened to as well.
Yeah.
But see, the pain is even greater because it's your own child, and you see the consequences of it every single day of your life, and I think the guilt must be eating away. But
did it cause any conflict between your mother and your father?
No. No, I know lots of families who have had conflicts and have got divorced because of it, but not between my parents, because we have a very strong family background as well, you know, family support as well. So no, it didn't cause anything. In fact, you know, I think it got stronger because both felt responsible
yes.
and both felt that, you know, if they need to take care of me, which is the strongest feelings they had, rather than now looking at how they're feeling.
Yeah. Moving on to talk about your birth. You were born in Uganda.
Yeah.
Were you born in a hospital?
I was born in my mother's older sister's nursing home.
Okay.
We had a family nursing home. So it was my aunt's nursing home that I was born in.
And do you know how the birth was for your mum? Was it generally a straightforward birth?
I think it was. I'd have to ask my dad, actually. I've never asked him. But I don't think he was present there. But yes, I think it was a straightforward, but she didn't get to see me.
So tell me a little bit about that. When your parents were first aware that you'd been born with an impairment, what happened then? Have they been able to talk to you about that?
Well, I believe, I've gathered stories, I believe that my father wasn't there. He was working in Jinja, because I was born in a town called Kampala. And can I shut the door?
Yes, of course, yeah.
So I believe that he was, you know, called, he was phoned and told that this had happened and to come and see me, see my mother straight away. I believe she was kept unconscious, you know, she was given sleeping pills to just not wake up. I also believe that I didn't see her for quite a while, about 10 days or so. And I believe that my father was told that, you know, come down with anesthetics to, you know, we can put her life at an end. Or it was even suggested to go and put me in the jungle where the animals could get to me and just forget about it. But it was a joint decision with my father and my mother not to do any of that and to, you know, keep me do the best they could with me, basically. So, you know, families have a lot of input when these kind of things happen. My mother has a large family, so there was a lot of input from the families. Although I believe my grandfather just said, if nobody wants her, I'm going to keep her.
Wow.
So my grandfather was very fond of me.
Yes.
So he said, nothing's going to happen to her. I'll take care of her.
Yes, yeah. It's very harsh, some of the things that happen when in those days. It would be different now.
That's right, yes. There would be a lot of other external support as well, not just, you know, family. But at that time, in that those circumstances, in that place, everybody was, you know, flabbergasted. Nobody had seen anything like this. So naturally, the first instinct is to, you know, just how am I going to survive? All sort of questions go through their minds.
Yes.
What is going to happen to me? Am I going to, you know, grow up, or am I going to just wither away or whatever?
Yeah.
So I guess at that time, although I couldn't understand it when I was younger, at that time those reactions were quite natural. And in this day and age, those reactions would be totally out of, you know, proportion, and they'd be...
They would be not acceptable.
Oh, they'd be hoo-hahed all over the world, wouldn't they?
Yes.
But the shock of it all, I think, is the major factor in all this. Mm. Suddenly, because you couldn't have a sonography, or you couldn't have a look at what the baby was like or anything. So I guess when something like me comes out, it's quite a shock.
Yes,
it is quite a shock.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't. I meant to ask you as well. Were you about your siblings? Do you? I know you said you had a sister. Is she older than you?
Yes, she's six and a half years older than me.
Okay.
And she's absolutely normal. Mm. Well, I don't know if she is normal, but a bit crazy in the mind. Yeah. But she's married, and her husband's actually a cardiologist as well. And she's got two sons. One of them is married, so she's well settled.
Mm-hmm. And do you know, some of these questions are more probably suitable to a sort of a Western culture hospital situation,
right.
But were your parents offered any kind of follow-up care when you were sent home? Did you have any, you know, kind of medical support or counselling support for your parents?
No, nothing like that. Not in those days, or not in somewhere like East Africa, Uganda. No,
no, exactly.
No. But even when my mother brought me, I was 6 months old when I came to this country to be proven that I am thalidomide. Even then, she had no support, no medical support. It was more like, she isn't thalidomide, and we don't want to prove it. And, you know, in fact, it was worse for her, because she, coming from a completely different culture, completely different background, completely different country, it was very hard for her to come and prove that I was thalidomide. Mm. And in fact, I think she was the last ones, or nearly the last ones, who did prove that I was thalidomide.
Mm. At what point then did your parents know, or have a suspicion that your impairment had been caused by thalidomide?
A very good family friend of ours, a well-known industrialist in Uganda, in a place called Kakira, when he saw me, because he was very good friends with Mum, and he heard what had happened, when he saw me, it was very obvious to him, because he'd read about it, being big industrialist, who'd read about it, that this pill is caused this kind of reactions. And I think, I'm not sure, but his son had a mental disability that was, I think, caused partly by thalidomide as well. Mm. So he suggested to my mom, in fact, it was his lawyers that wrote over here and suggested that we've got a thalidomide child here who we'd like to send over and investigate whether she is thalidomide or not. Mm-hmm. And on his recommendations, my mum came to England for the first time,
right.
6 months after I was born.
And prior to that, had you just gone straight home from the nursing home where you'd been born? Had you gone straight back to the family home, or were you kept in hospital for any period of time?
Well, the nursing home was home anyway, because my grandmother's home and my auntie's home was attached to the nursing home. So part of the building was a nursing home, a 17-bed nursing home, and then the rest of it was the house. So it was, but I was taken home, where we lived in Jinja, and the nursing home was in Kampala. Mm. So I think it was a couple of months before I was taken home.
Mm. And did you have to have any kind of medical interventions whilst you were in hospital, or in the nursing home, before you went back to the family home?
What kind of medical interventions?
Did you have any kind of surgery or any medical treatments at all?
No.
No.
No. Surgery was suggested when my mother brought me here for the first time to straighten my hands, but she'd had some stories where, you know, it didn't work, so she felt that it's better for me to adapt the way I was rather than have surgery and then not be able to do anything at all.
She did
refuse surgery.
And for the sake of the interview, could you describe your impairment?
I have upper limb deficiency. Both my upper limbs are short, to the point where I can do a few things, but I can't do things like undressing and you know, personal things I cannot do at all because I can't reach places. But I can do driving and cooking and things like that. But the main thing is I wish I couldn't do the driving and cooking and do personal things, you know. So, yes. But you never get what you want.
No, you never do.
If I had chosen, I would have chosen. Okay, yes. Can I do the, you know, my personal things rather than that?
Yes.
But yes, so I've got upper limb deficiency. Both my arms are shortened.
And let's go back now to the your mum coming to the UK when you were 6 months old. To get you assessed to see if you were eligible for compensation.
Yes.
And do you? I mean, obviously you don't remember that.
No.
But has your mum described how that process worked, what she had to do, or where she stayed?
We were very short of money in those days because my father was a practicing, but there were several doctors in the same street as he was, so income wasn't that high. Mm. We lived in rented accommodation when we came down here, so my parents had to pay for that. So it was, the trips were, you know, very far apart because they saved and then they sent me. So trips were quite far apart. We couldn't, like, if we were called every week, we wouldn't be able to come. I think my mum came here and stayed a month or so and then would come back because it was very expensive. I mean, you know, hotels and everything. Renting a flat was £12 a week. But at that time, might as well have been £200, £300 a week.
Yes.
That's how much we, you know, felt. Money was hard, so it was very difficult for them to keep coming and going. But with friends and family, and they borrowed a lot as well, that was how they achieved to get me here.
And how long did that go on for, the coming back and forth?
Up until the compensation, I think that was about 5 years, 6 years, that we went on, that mum would come every 6 months or so.
And so at that moment, your main base was still
Uganda.
In Uganda.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because my father was earning there.
Yeah.
So if he had left, then we would have had nothing.
Yeah.
In fact, we were living in my uncle's home as well because we couldn't afford a house, couldn't afford the rent. So my uncle gave us his house to live in.
Mm. And it was just you and your mum that came to this country?
Yes, yes. Yeah. The other thing was my father was too proud to accept any money from anybody else, especially my grandfather who had tons and tons of it, but my father wouldn't accept any of it. So he was, you know, he wanted to do it all himself. Again, maybe it was the guilt factor as well, that I've done this, so I've got to now put it straight.
Yes, yeah. So if the assessments and things went on for about 6 years, do you have any recollection of that? Do you have any memories of coming back here for those?
All I remember is coming back here and living in a flat and sometimes us getting lost because we didn't know where the flat was. And, you know, I'd tell my mom she would be carrying shopping and I'd feel sorry for her. And I'd say, you stand here and I'll go and have a look. And she would say to me, you're only two or 3 years old.
Yes.
You can't go off on your own. You know,
yes.
Those kind of small recollections,
yes.
Being very cold, not having proper clothes because obviously we come from a very tropical climate.
Yes.
And clothes were expensive.
Yeah.
Coats, etc., were very expensive. So not having the proper, you know, attire for that sort of season. My mum struggling very hard, you know, doing the cooking in the flat and all those sorts of little things, but not as such going to court or...
Yes.
I remember being prodded and, you know, we used to have to go to these doctors who'd tell us to undress and then they'd take photographs of our hands or limbs or whatever was affected, to make sure that we were thalidomide and try and sort, you know, straighten out the arm or do this or the other with the arm, which was quite painful as well.
Yes.
Those little things I remember, much so.
Yeah.
But at that time, my mother was so protective that you feel that at least, you know, you got somebody there who's going to be there for you always. And so it didn't matter, this will be over in a few minutes, you know.
Yes.
But I remember being left alone in the rooms because mothers were told to go out so that they could examine us. And that was the worst thing.
Yes, and that would never happen.
It wouldn't
now.
Be happening now. No, they wouldn't leave children with. Even medical staff nowadays alone.
No.
So
that must have. It probably must have made quite a strong bond between your mum and you.
It is very strong.
So, you know, doing the fact that you shared all that together.
Yeah, very strong. So very strong. And, you know, she, like I say, even till the day she had the stroke, she's very protective, you know. Anybody says anything to me or does anything to me, she'd be there like a cat, you know, with the claws out. So that sometimes it was too overpowering. But then there was the comfort of, you know, my mum being there.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
And for me, I come from a very, very different society. So I didn't leave home at 18, or I didn't have to go to work at 18, you know, they were there to protect me.
Yes, yes, and that is different, isn't it? And do you know what age you were when you knew that your impairment was caused by thalidomide, or you became aware that you had something different about your body?
I've in Africa, in Uganda, we were a very close-knit community. Nobody made me feel I was any different. I was included in everything. I would play badminton, and I'd play anything that was going, swimming, take part in everything at school, egg and spoon races, sack races, everything. I didn't feel any different in Africa. But as soon as we left in 1972 to go to India, just before, you know, the Ugandan incident happened. And that's when I started feeling different, because I got stared at. And I got commented on, and I got laughed at. So that's really when I started feeling different, and that's when I started asking my mum questions and crying, because I'd never come across that. You know, everywhere I went, everybody knew me in Africa. Oh, hi. Yes. You know, I have a pet name, they call me Chinchu. So it was always, oh, there's Chinchu, you know. Nothing like, oh, there's thalidomide girl or anything like that.
No.
So didn't even know about thalidomide until after I left India and came here.
Right.
So
you went to India in 1972, that's when you were 8.
Yes.
And how long would you have stayed in, and you'd had your compensation money through then?
We'd had the promise of compensation money through, but it hadn't come through yet.
Right, yes.
I basically went to India because we had a family home there. My grandmother was there. Not my maternal, but my paternal grandmother was there. And we had somewhere to stay because my sister was starting college, basically. And colleges in Africa weren't that, you know, you only had a couple of choices. So we left before this happened. And in India, I started school because my sister started college. That's where things were getting quite, you know, I found out that I'm different from her. I mean, I could see it, but I didn't think I was any different, you see. I just coped differently, that's all. Could see people's hands were longer than mine, and, you know. But it didn't sort of strike me that that's why I'm different. But going to India and being laughed at and being talked about, and even being, you know, some people just took the mickey out of me by sort of making actions like me. So that was the worst bit. And that's when I used to come to my mum and ask her and cry and say, why are they doing this to me? Why am I different? And then she'd try and explain, but just went over my head.
Yes.
Until I was about, we left India to come and settle down here. After my dad got a job here, once we were thrown out of Uganda, we had nowhere, no money coming in, nothing. So my dad managed to come to England in 1976. No, it's 1974 he came, sorry. And he got a job as a general practitioner here. And then he called my mother and myself over. My sister was already here studying. And that's when I started school, etc. here. But the trouble was coming from one background, one country to another country, being mimicked there and all the rest of it, laughter. Then coming here and still getting stared at, but no comments made, obviously, because there weren't that many thalidomiders around yet. We were still quite young and in our own little worlds and in our own little niches and schools and not colleges yet. So it was, I started at a boarding school where, you know, I was treated a bit differently as well. over here, and not just because of my disability, but because of where I came from and my colour.
So you had a lot of different things against you. So correct. You were 10 years old.
Yes.
And was it the first time you'd been to like a sort of formal education?
Yes, in England, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So 10 years old, going to a boarding school.
Yes.
In an unfamiliar country.
Correct.
With people staring at you.
Yes. Mm. With there was only one other Asian girl at the school. Mm. And she was not a boarder, she was a day girl. So it was very difficult for me, not only from the students, but also from the teachers as well.
Mm. Where did your parents decide to send you to a boarding school?
We lived in a village called Edenbridge in Kent, and the nearest school was in Limpsfield Chart, which was about 20 miles away. So I couldn't communicate because we only had one car. Mm. I mean, I couldn't commute because of one car. And my dad needed the car for his, to make visits and go to the surgeries and things like that. So it was decided to put me there.
And at this point of time, were you or your parents in contact with, did you go to any of the events organised by the Thalidomide Society? Did you have contact
Never.
With other?
No.
No.
No, I didn't want any contact.
Okay.
I didn't want to meet any other thalidomiders, although my mum always encouraged me, and she did, but I never did. I always refused.
Why was that?
I didn't want to see a reflection of me, or I didn't want to know about any other people that were thalidomiders or how they were coping, or I didn't really care. I just felt sorry for myself.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're not the only person who felt like that.
Really?
It's quite interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think it's also partly maybe a bit of self-denial that you just don't want to spend time thinking about it too much? You want to be able to fit in with everybody else.
And I don't think I was at that sort of stage where I felt self-denial. Mm. I think I was at a stage where I didn't care about anything else. I was just trying to survive, if you know what I mean. Mm. I was just trying to get on with my life. Mm. And I was just trying to do the best I could. And I didn't want to find out from other people how they were doing. And I just, it just didn't occur to me. Mm. It didn't occur to me.
And the primary, the boarding school when you were 10.
Sorry, can I just stop you there and say, even the logistics were a bit difficult.
Yes.
If we did have to go and meet other people, it would be very difficult because my father's job came first. Mm. You know, putting food on the table came first. Mm. And also, I was very, very into my family, if you know what I mean. I was very protected within that environment. Mm. I felt safe, and I thought if I step out, go and meet other people and things, my world's going to collapse.
So quite vulnerable.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so.
But you said your parents did get in touch with other thalidomide children's parents.
Yes.
I think there was.
Yes, yeah. They did. Finally, you know, my mother would attend some of the trust meetings or something like that. That was going on, and she did encourage me a lot. But I would just say no. I was a shy person anyway.
Yeah.
I was a very shy person, very timid at that time. Mm. Now I've gone the opposite direction. But I was. I was taken from one country to another My education was up the creek because I couldn't settle down in one place. So and the curriculums were different. The language was different.
Yes.
And adjusting to all that, plus having to meet other thalidomiders, plus having to adjust to the weather, the climate, everything was too overwhelming. It was too, yes. And you know, you have to cut out something in your life. And I thought the best thing to cut out is other thalidomiders. It's easier to cut out other thalidomiders.
Yes, we were up against quite a lot at that period of time. What was it like when you left home then and you were actually living in at a boarding school? Because you were saying that, you know, your family network was very supportive. Mm. And
I had a carer come with me.
Yeah.
So, and she was very familiar to me because she had raised me since I was in India. So since I was 8 years old, she had raised me. So that helped a lot. But again, because of the circumstances, because suddenly taken away from my environment, I felt very vulnerable. Yeah. And I felt I,